Hey Budai Nation, welcome to the Ecom Show, where we invite e-commerce entrepreneurs, marketers, and agencies to talk about e-commerce, the best strategies and tactics, and what to implement in your own e-com store. Before we jump into this episode, I ask you to subscribe to this podcast. Make sure you share it with at least one friend. As you probably know, we don't run ads. Our growth is purely organic, so it would mean the world to me if you could support us. And now let's jump into the episode. Hey everyone, here is Daniel Budai with a brand new episode of our e-commerce show. And today I'm here with the CEO and founder of Pyra, Sam Moore from Australia. And this is an interesting brand. These brands are close to my heart, to be honest, because I'm a huge fan of hiking and nature. And some of our listeners, maybe you know, I studied geology for 6 years at the uni. So that's one big reason. And he's in this niche, so I'm sure this will be a great combo today. Hey, Sam, how are you?
Good, thanks, Daniel. Thanks for having me on here.
So let's start with the early days of your brand. Is this your first business or not? And also, what was your initial motivation when you started out?
Yeah, so I grew up in New Zealand originally. I was New Zealand's... A very beautiful country, and there's a lot of nice mountains and a lot of beaches. So I was very active. You know, I grew up professionally skiing back in the day. I would always surf in summer. So I've always been involved in the outdoors. When I studied graphic design at university, it was a long time ago now. but when I first moved to Australia, I designed for a lot of, you know, pretty big streetwear brands and surf brands here. And then I started a brand, another brand called Dead Studios, which I did for 6 years, and we grew that and rolled out our own retail stores. That was more like a denim, and we had women's activewear. And then I sold that to a big retailer here called Culture Kings. Mm-hmm. And in that same kind of process, I then, you know, knew that my story wasn't over, and, you know, wanted to start a new brand that was more aligned with my values and my passions. So, you know, my experience of, you know, being in the outdoors, being an ex-professional skier, you know, I really knew outerwear really well. I knew what good quality outerwear was, and I knew what technical apparel needed to be. And, you know, my background as a streetwear designer, I kind of saw the gap bridging the two kind of niches together. And that's how Pyra was born. You know, the name Pyra comes from the ancient Greek meaning born of flame. And, you know, there's four elements that everything is made up of: earth, water, air, and fire. So tying the Pyra elements together kind of really made sense for the brand.
Yeah. So, and what was the year? When was this, when you started?
So we started the brand at the start of 2020, so right at the start of COVID. Okay. So a pretty interesting time to launch a new business, but as it turns out, probably a great time. Most e-commerce businesses really accelerated during that time. A lot of people, you know, were stuck at home and had a lot of, you know, especially over our side of the world, was given a lot of free cash from the government. So most e-commerce brands really shot up then. And, you know, we were lucky to be able to, you know, drive a lot of growth just during that period. You know, being an outdoors inspired brand, a lot of people couldn't get outdoors at that time. And, you know, once our borders kind of opened, we really saw an accelerated kind of growth in the outdoors market. People, you know, really wanted to, you know, connect with nature again after being stuck in the house for 6 months.
Yeah. And did you start selling only in Australia or worldwide or just a few countries?
So we've just focused on Australia and New Zealand to date. We've gone over to the US before and done trade shows over there and met with some major retailers over there as well. So that's the plan in the next 12 months is to continue the USA push, especially online. We're already targeting our ads over there already and, you know, sending a fair amount of traffic over there.
Amazing. So you mentioned that you recognize a gap between streetwear and outdoor wear. And what was that gap? How would you describe?
Yeah, I suppose, you know, like when you think of the, like as a designer and I speak of the like pure categories of what streetwear is, you're kind of talking, you know, your basic tees, you're talking about hoodies, and you're talking about kind of windbreakers. You know, I was kind of looking at it as a idea of taking more technical fabrics, you know, more breathable fabrics and putting them into, you know, streetwear kind of silhouettes, but also just kind of, you know, we kind of used a term internally at Pyra and it's street to trail. So technical streetwear that can be worn, you know, every day in the city, but is also performance driven and can be worn, you know, on the trail or in the mountain, you know, without any technical anoraks or spray jackets or, you know, our 10K waterproof jackets as well. And our puffer jackets, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. So what would you say, what were the biggest turning points in your business in the last now 3 years or almost 4 years, right?
Yeah, so this is our fourth year. I think, you know, for us when, you know, I always had a really clear vision of this brand. I wanted to inspire people to get back outdoors into the elements. So that was our kind of our North Star. You know, our biggest thing is, you know, growing a team. I suppose when you start off, you know, you're a one-man band and you know, luckily, you know, I am a designer and I also have dealt with China and doing all of our production for most brands that I've worked with for the last 10 years. So I already kind of had that dialed. But, you know, I suppose diving deep into e-commerce and, you know, really kind of accelerating that and, you know, getting deep into paid media and understanding the strategies behind that as well is really kind of, you know, been a big learning curve and something that, you know, has really helped us along the way.
Yeah. And what is the size of your team currently?
We're still really small. It's only three people.
Okay, only
only three people. But we outsource all of our warehousing to a 3PL warehouse, so we're not having to worry about packing orders or anything. We plan to open up our own retail stores in the next 6 months as well. So there's a lot more staff to be hired. We're running it super lean at the moment, but we're on the kind of hunt for really good talent.
Yeah. So I know you are, and as you said, so you went to trade shows, you have some, you know, retail presence as well. Now you are going to the US, or maybe you are already there, you will tell us soon, but that's very interesting. It sounds like from day one, you were intentional to, you know, because most e-commerce businesses, or many of them, they just run ads on Meta or Google, maybe some SEO, and that's it. So only direct to consumer. But you think differently and you go to trade shows, you know, real life events. And I know it's a lot of extra effort.
For sure. I suppose I had a vision from the start for this brand to take it global. So all of these different steps that were kind of going along the way, they've all been part of the plan. You know, we have massive revenue goals that we want to hit in the next 10 years. And, you know, to be able to hit those, I don't want it to be a purely an online play only. You know, I really see building the brand with really key retail partners for wholesale is key. And then also having our retail strategy for bricks and mortar as well, because our products are a touch and feel kind of product. We are a higher price point. You know, our brand really translates well to our consumers when they can try it on, they can feel the fabrics, you know, and it really helps to convert better. Where online, you're a little bit limited to that, you know, unless people have already bought from you before. So once we have our returning customers, you know, we tend to, you know, build loyal customers for life.
Yeah. What's the usual price point of the items?
So our tees are around $80. Our jackets go up to about $400. So it can, you know, our AOV at the moment, I think, sitting at $170.
Yeah. I think that's a price point where so to be honest, you have to be good at online sales, because selling a jacket for $400, people will think about it twice. I assume though, I assume you don't really have impulse buyers. It doesn't work like that.
Yeah, I mean, we do like a pretty good job of building brand, I think, as well. And there's, a lot of entry-level price points. Like some people might just buy the hat for the first time at, say, $50, or a t-shirt at $60. So there's always, those kind of first-time buyers that want to test the waters, make sure the brand's legit, make sure the quality's good. But I suppose, that's why our retail partners have been fantastic for our growth, because we can leverage off their platforms, their stores, and their audience as well. So getting our brand into, say, David Jones, which is a major retailer over a big department store, Culture Kings as well, and a couple of others. These guys have got really big platforms and huge customer bases. So our brand sitting in their stores, aligned next to other great brands, really kind of helps cement us in the market. We're not just another kind of small e-commerce brand that's just popped up out of nowhere, which tends to happen a lot.
And what are your thoughts on Amazon?
Yeah, Amazon's not as big as it is in the US. Over in Australia and New Zealand, it was talked about lots about 3 years ago when they were first coming here. In terms of apparel, they're not as big over here. I mean, definitely books, electronics, all of that sort of stuff. I've personally bought a lot of stuff off there, but not in terms of apparel. I think, yeah, there's probably a little bit of time to go before we jump over there.
Hey Budai Nation, welcome to the Ecom Show. I ask you to subscribe to this podcast, and if you like it, make sure you share it with at least one friend. As you probably know, we don't run ads. Our growth is purely organic, so it would mean the world to me if you could support us. I hope we can serve our audience in the best way. And now let's jump into the episode. So if anyone goes to your website, you can find very high quality videos. I really like those. One is on the about page, and there was another one, I don't know, somewhere I found it. And I'm just wondering, how did you shoot those videos? I mean, you hired someone, or you did it yourself with your own skills?
Yeah.
I really like those because they tell a story, and the imagery is beautiful. It's in nature. People are in nature. So I really liked it.
Yeah, thank you. Like, from day dot, storytelling has been a really important part in our marketing. It really just ties back to our mission of inspiring people to get back outdoors into the elements. So each of our locations we shoot, we tend to always pick somewhere very beautiful, and we always call out that location as well, whether it's in US Alabama Falls or down in Tasmania, or we've done New Zealand multiple times. All of these landscapes really kind of set the mood for the brand. I use a team to do this. I obviously creative direct them all, but, I'm not behind the camera. But it's always an important storytelling point of our brand. We do them 4 times a year, and they are an expensive activity, but it really elevates the brand in terms of our content. We use all of that content, not only on our websites, but we use it in our catalogs. We use it on every social media channel. We use it in all of our ads. So, by having high quality product and high quality content, you kind of bridge the gap between the two.
Yeah, it makes sense. And I think storytelling is crucial to sell these products with such a high price point. I mean, quality is one thing and communicating that quality, but storytelling and brand building is another one. So both helps you to keep those high order values in your e-commerce store.
Yeah, absolutely.
You mentioned the importance of returning customers. And as the listeners know, my company, we focus on email marketing and customer retention. So what's your approach there, and how do you see email marketing in general?
Yeah, so we spend about 2/3 of our digital strategy at top of funnel. So we're actively trying to acquire new customers all the time. We obviously retarget them with our middle of funnel and a bit of bottom of funnel, but then we also are using Klaviyo as well. Once they kind of fall into our funnel, they're getting all our flow emails, where it's the welcome series, which tells you about the brand. It talks about of all of our kind of core values as the brand, you know, what inspires us, what are our key products, and really kind of the entry level introduction, telling you the whole story. And then we use SMS as well. We've used that fairly, only really at sale time, which is only really a couple of times a year. We try not to really hammer people on that. But more of a, it's more on a meta play, for top of funnel and then middle of funnel digital marketing. And then obviously the, yeah, as I said, the Klaviyo.
Yeah. Yeah. Completely makes sense. Do you use Klaviyo for SMS or something else?
No, we don't. I don't think Klaviyo SMS actually works in Australia. So we use SMS Bump.
Okay. Yeah. Makes sense. So maybe a few more personal questions. So for you as a business leader and founder, what was the biggest challenge that you had to overcome during these years?
I think just having the confidence to start another brand was the main thing. You know, I was kind of told from my dad when I was younger that, you know, by the age of, you know, 25 to 30, you know, you can kind of afford to lose it all. And, you know, if it all goes to shit, then you can kind of rebuild yourself. You tend to not have a mortgage at that age. You don't have kids or whatever. So, you know, taking a risk has always been in my blood. So having the kind of confidence to kind of jump back in after the back of my other business, that was probably the biggest leap, I would say. And then I suppose just making sure that, you know, moving forward, that we were just stay on the right track, you know, in terms of the product. And, you know, I'm a big believer if you try and sell to everyone, you sell to no one. So we're really trying to stay in our lane and really kind of concentrate on being the world's best and make the world's best product for technical apparel.
Yeah. That's a great piece of advice. And who was your biggest mentor and where do you learn business? You know, because it depends on, you know, everyone is different, but many people, especially online entrepreneurs, they don't really have a role model in their families or in their close surroundings.
Yeah, it's true. And, you know, coming from a creative background, you know, the numbers side and the business side of entrepreneur doesn't come naturally. You know, I didn't study, do an MBA or do any of those things. So I kind of, you know, got chucked in the deep end, I suppose. And I really just hammered myself to learn that side of my brain. You know, the key books that have really kind of helped me along the way is the Jim Collins book, Good to Great, on building, you know, a strong company. The E-Myth Revisited is a really good book talking about business, basically from, you know, starting a brand or a business all the way through to scaling it. My personal MBA was another really good one. So I've really kind of just thrown myself in the deep end in terms of learning and listening to other people's podcasts and entrepreneurs' stories. You know, I'm a big fan of Chip Wilson, who started Lululemon in Canada. You know, he's got a really great book called My Stretchy Little Black Pants, I believe it's called. But there's a lot of key takeaways. You know, I listen to How I Built This on NPR podcasts most weeks. So I think if you're always absorbing and always learning, then, you know, if you're failing, you tend to be failing forward. And that's kind of a, you know, a motto that I've kind of lived by as well is, you know, if you're failing forward, then, you know, you're learning and you're moving in the right direction.
Yeah, I really agree with that. And as you said, when you are younger and you have less dependencies, then it's easier. You can fail forward even faster.
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So it sounds like for you, books and podcasts, these two are the main things to learn, right?
Yeah, basically, for sure. I also worked under a guy named Simon Baird for 3 years as well. And he was the founder of Culture Kings. And he, you know, has a great story as well of starting his retail business from the markets and, you know, getting an exit for 600 mil. And was a really inspiring guy to work for and learn from. You know, he's kind of exited that business now and kind of going on his other journey. But you know, I've also got other friends in the industry that have started their own brands and, you know, turned them into really successful businesses as well. So I've been a big believer in, you know, you are who you hang out with, you know, surrounding yourself with those successful people. And if you can't track those sort of people down, and if they're not in your network, then try and find them. There's a lot of communities out there where, you know, you can go to seminars like Tony Robbins seminars, or you can, you know, which I've done, or, you know, any of those kind of meetups where there's a lot of entrepreneurs out there these days that are wanting the connection.
Yeah. And if you cannot find them, then you should be okay to travel, I think.
100%. Yeah, definitely. I mean, the Gold Coast is pretty isolated in Australia. I lived in Sydney for 13 years, and, you know, it's a major city there, but Gold Coast is a lot smaller town. And so you don't have as much of those opportunities. But, you know, as you said, you just got to travel and you got to, you know, make the effort and take those meetings.
Yeah. So you went to these trade shows, and I'm curious, do you calculate some kind of ROI on those, or that's not the case at all? You just go there?
We actually did them in our first, before we'd even launched the brand. So they were, it wasn't hugely successful because we did it right before COVID, and then all of America went down into lockdown, basically. So we did that in January of 2020, and then basically the whole world shut down in March. So it wasn't the best result for us. In terms of ROI, it usually is direct for us. It relates to getting orders from major retailers. But we've been able to build off the back of that some really good relationships that we still have today that we're looking at expanding over there. I suppose for us as well, you know, Australia and New Zealand is still a pretty big market, and, you know, we've got a lot to do to try and, you know, become leaders in this market here first. But, you know, USA is the goal, and same with Europe. So to be able to get to that sort of revenue volume, you know, we really need to be hitting both of those global areas.
Yeah, makes sense. Actually, I think you were luckier, because I remember I got my ticket to California for the end of March, and they just shut down on, I think, 15th of March, I remember, when Trump announced it. So, yeah, that was very unlucky.
Yeah, it was. But we plan to go do those trade shows next year as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So my last question, what would be your number one advice to, let's say, yourself 4 years ago, and to someone who is in the same shoes then as you were 4 years ago?
I think just give it a go. You don't, you know, so many people are scared of leaving their full-time jobs. You know, if you can, you know, starting a brand in our industry has never been easier. You know, you can start a Shopify store and 2 hours, you can have things mocked up on blanks within a half a day, and you can start a brand within a day. You know, get the ball rolling, get some money coming in, build the brand, you know, and spend the time actually coming up with, you know, a clear brand identity for your brand, because, you know, having a clear mission, thinking about what your vision is, thinking about your core values of the company, all these things here are really key. And if, you know, there's a lot of brands out there and a lot of noise. So think about doing those things well first and then execute off that. But, you know, don't be afraid to keep that full-time job until, you know, you've built up enough revenue to jump ship, because, you know, starting an apparel brand is extremely expensive. And, you know, the timelines, especially if you do manufacturing overseas, can be really long. So there's a long burn rate before you even get your first dollar in the door. But, you know, my advice to anyone is, you know, just give it a go. You've got it, you know, life's too short not to give it a crack.
Yeah. Yesterday I had a podcast with someone who was in the team of Shopify Plus when they just started out Shopify Plus. He was the content manager, and he told me that he knew the founder. I think he's called Toby Latke from Canada. Yeah. And he really wants to represent the rebels, you know, who want to get out of the 9-to-5, start their own business. And he wants to lower the bar for those rebels, you know, to be able to start a brand, any kind of e-commerce brand in 2 minutes using for Shopify. Sure.
Like, it's literally so easy now. It's a lot of it's even drag and drop. You know, I listened to a podcast on that guy, and, you know, because he started his first company as a snowboard brand. And, you know, it was incredibly hard for him to start an e-commerce website back in the day. And, you know, obviously, long story short, he pivoted and became a tech developer. But, you know, thank God he did, because, you know, he's helped so many brands get online quickly and, you know, start making an income.
Yeah, yeah. He has a great story. And, Sam, thanks a lot for coming here today, sharing your story. And I wish you a great luck with your brand and expanding in, you know, in the US, Europe, and all over the world, and hitting those revenue numbers. And thanks everyone who listened to the podcast. And stay tuned, because every week we come out with two new episodes. And if you want to find Pyra's products, then the website is pyraelements.com. I will put the description, I will put the link into the description. And I will also put another link into the description, which is our top 100 email templates that we collected with our team over 5 years. You can go ahead and download it for free. So thanks again, and have a great day, everyone.
Cool. Thanks, Daniel.